Australia. It echoes to the sound of horses galloping, balls hitting bats, and beers being opened. But now, those alluring vibrations of golden memories will be replaced by a bunch of blokes ripping into sport life and all the good things. So get the snags ready, warm up the pool, and get your missus that spa treatment she's always wanted. Thanks to the gang at Brighton's Lawyers, protecting your future. A few good sportsmen on Triple M.
The final hour of the show, Matty White, Matt Burke and Ryan Girdler here driving you for the next 55 or so minutes, and then it's, let's get on the punt, boys. I reckon that's what we should do.
I'm on fire.
Oh, sorry,
so
you're already on it, eh?
I'm already on it. If I stop talking mid-sentence, it's because I might be watching one of the races.
But you haven't listeners any tips yet.
No, I haven't.
Are you going to?
Yes. Yeah, the next. I'm going to tip number 9 in the next.
Okay.
At Flemington.
Which is race?
It's called
Race 5.
Sign off.
Okay.
Sign off. Right.
Sign off. Paying $2.35.
Did you boys do the Halloween thing yesterday?
We did. Up and down the street for us, and it was the two little ones got out there. Number 3 and 4 got out there. So Giselle is number 3.
You know what? They're going to go home. You're going to go home. Dad spoke about me on the radio.
I was on radio today.
I'm number three.
So we got home from work and took Giselle and Zaza out. Now, number 3 and 4. So they all dressed up.
That's 3 and 4 because that's much easier than Giselle and Zaza.
Yeah, exactly right. And then, so they're on the run, and they just lost the concept of asking for trick or treat.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, Dad, can you go and knock on the door? I said, no, but it's your gig. Like, you got to get in there. And they're actually, maybe it's part of our parenting from Kate and I, they're actually really polite. They'll take one chocolate or one lolly. I was going, no, get the hand in there.
Could you imagine that?
Get in there.
You live in Berkey Street, and all of a sudden someone knocks on your door, you open the door, and it's Matt Burke asking for a lolly.
Hey, Gertz, I'd find that creepy.
That's a bit weird. It's funny. I sort of got involved this year, and I don't know whether I went about it the right way, because I sent my little girls, they went to as you got away with it too, Matty. I had some friends that took my two little out and did the trick-or-treat thing, and I stayed home, but they went. Kids knocked on my door. I said, no, I don't do the Halloween thing. Is that right?
Are you one of those
blokes? So I sent it out, I didn't have any lollies. I wasn't prepared.
Come on.
I was happy to receive, but I wasn't so happy to give.
The Grinch.
Isn't that awful?
I might have gone down the surf club and had a couple of beers with them. left it in the hands of the neighbours, though.
With a witch's nose on there, Matty. You're in the right spirit.
No, seriously, I got down the surf club. I was catching up with a mate, and there was about 5 other blokes down there, you know, having the regular Friday night sort of thing. And we all looked at each other and went, mate, we are the smartest guys in the suburb, aren't we?
How did you fix that?
That's just the way the cookie crumbled, mate, and I just took advantage of it. I'll probably pay for it this afternoon. Thanks for bringing it up. Hey, Greg Bird's going to join us very soon ahead of the Four Nations match between the Aussies and the English. This is A Few Good Sportsmen on Triple M. A Few Good Sportsmen on Triple M, Saturday Arvo Sport with Ryan Girdler, Matty Burke and me, Matt White, and it's all thanks to Brighton's Lawyers, protecting your future. You wouldn't know that it's the NRL off-season. You were laughing at me because we've just got chicken for lunch.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you wouldn't know, but we just had a spicy peri-peri chicken and none of us can talk at the moment.
Berkey, you're pretty good with your medical stuff. What does it mean when your chest is on fire?
Oh, my God. I tell you what, the first hit got you. Gird, you're coughing and spluttering.
I was just about to say,
they
you wouldn't
forgot
know
the water.
The NRL off-season, because there's a fair bit going around. Yeah. Darius Boyd's been released by Newcastle to go and join Wayne Bennett as part of the Bennett clause that he takes with him. Anthony Watmale's put on a Eels jumper for the first time yesterday. Excuse me. And the Aussies play England tomorrow in the Four Nations, which you'll be calling. And on the line is a man named at number 12 for this one, Greg Bird. G'day, Birdie.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Mate, we're good. So you've been named at number 12. Can you give us any word on the makeup of the team, and especially Daly Cherry Evans? Is he good to go?
I'm pretty sure he'll be good to go, mate. He's had to do a fitness test this morning at our captain's run and pulled through it all good, as far as I know. But other than that, it's pretty much quite a similar turn than we played last week.
Hey, Birdie, Gerds, mate. Obviously wasn't the result you needed last week, and probably a real eye-opener for some of the younger guys. But again, there's a few opportunities for some young guys to stand up tomorrow. And how's their preparation been this week? I guess they'll be a little bit more ready for what's to come.
Yeah, I think they were. I think we got our pants pulled down a little bit last week. We might have turned up a little bit complacent, and this Australian team is, well, most of us have been here for a fair while now, so You get that continuity, and everyone, I guess, maybe expected it to just flow like it did, but like it has been in the last few years, but a few faces missing, and that didn't happen. And I think a few of the younger guys are a little bit overawed by the situation, and I'm sure they'll be better off this week.
Birdie, Matt Burke, mate, there's plenty of talk during the week from the media about pressure from you guys. Are you guys feeling the pressure at the moment, knowing that it's a must win? How's Tim Sheens approached it, mate?
Yeah, we're definitely feeling the pressure. We don't want to be the first Australian team, and I think since the Four Nations concept started, to not make a final, that'd be massive for this team, especially the ageing guys who probably might not get a start if that ever happens. So, we're feeling the pressure, and Tim has, he's addressed the fact that, we were terrible, and we have to approach the game a completely different way than we did last week.
What about, there's also been some talk that young Dave Clemmer might get a start last week. Had a little bit of trouble coming out of your own end. Is he going to be playing tomorrow?
I'd say so, mate. He's he's named, I think, a seventh man bench. He's a little bit unsure in a few positions, but I think Big Dave's going to come off the bench. He's a bit of a big powerhouse, and he's been showing some great form for the Bulldogs this year, off the back of blokes like James Graham and some old heads there. So hopefully the old heads in this side can steer him in the right direction. He can get a bit of punch for us.
What do you make of the English side, Birdie? They weren't great last week. They did enough to win, and as you know, probably their first game of the tournament, they were probably a little bit complacent as well. Do you expect probably a better showing from them on Sunday?
Yeah, we will expect a better showing from them. They, obviously one of their best. They had a lot of fresh faces in their side as well. But the guys that we expected to go good did go good. James Graham, George Burgess, those two guys are their leaders in the middle, and we expect them two to come out and have another big game.
Hey Birdie, Matt Burke was just talking before about the passion in the jersey and what you really play this game for, and it's a funny one, isn't it, mate, for rugby league, because the pinnacle, I guess, is State of Origin, and you've experienced it all. So where does this Australian jersey fit in for you?
Oh, mate, you're playing for your country. There's been a lot of talk that players don't respect this level of the game, and they wanted to go get their injuries sorted out. It's a bit of crap, really. Everyone loves playing for Australia. You love getting in and playing with the best players in the world. It's unfortunate this year that we're missing so many players through injury. But that's the way it is, and I know I love every opportunity I get to pull on the green and gold, and just like Gerz did, and you did too, Berkey.
What about this young Sione Mataiutai, Birdie? He gets his opportunity. I'm not sure whether it's Mataiutai,
Matautia.
What's his show, mate? 7 NRL games, and he's been chosen to wear the green and gold. Obviously, he must be some sort of special talent.
Yeah, I think he's a special talent. There's been a few young guys around his age that have made their debuts, and they've gone on. Israel Folau's was the last one. I actually made my debut the same day as him. He's gone on to bigger and better things, and I guess no one knew how good he was going to be when he first debuted, and it's going to be similar with this young Sione. I watched him play in the Prime Minister's game over in PNG a couple of weeks ago, and I thought he was the best on ground. He's a strong kid, fast, and he'll bring the ball back strongly for us, and that's exactly what we need. That's him and Joshy Mansour getting their set started.
It's about getting the opportunity, though, isn't it, Birdie? I mean, these Gerz mentioned before last week, young guys coming through. It's a great thrill to run out in front of the stadium, a packed house, and get these young guys singing the national anthem and ready to go, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, they help us as much with that youthful enthusiasm that they're going to bring. And, it's not going to be, there's no secret that this team is ageing. Over the next couple of years, there's going to be a lot more of these young players coming through, and the more experience they can get playing next to blokes like Greg Inglis and Kevin Smith and Cooper Cronk, the better players in the future they're going to be for Australia.
Mate, by the way, when you hit 30, you stay at 30 for the next 4 years. I finished at 34, 34 and a half, but I was only 30 in the program.
Yeah, I'm my first year at 30 this year.
So stay right there. Hey, mate, I heard some hollering going on behind you. Did the boys behind you win on that race?
No, I think the crossing between The Four Nations New Zealand Samoa games on at the moment.
Okay.
So they're watching that, and then they're crossing over to the track at Flemington. So.
Let me tell you.
What's the score?
Hang on. Let's just open up to Greg here. I was the one listening to you there, Greg,
yes.
because Gerds and Berkey were on that horse in the last.
The nine. I did tip it.
Number nine. So you're being all nice and serious and opening up to us about the young blokes in the team, and these guys are jumping around the studio getting on board number nine.
So what won the last at Flemington?
Yeah,
the nine.
Sign off. $2.40.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't on that one.
hey, Bernie,
I'm with you, mate.
Who's winning the other Four Nations game at the moment?
I think what's the score, boys? What's the score? 0-0.
Oh, okay.
0-0, okay.
You're a champ. So yeah. We got horse racing, got footy. Mate, can you give us a traffic report?
We're actually getting updates on the game by Greg Booth. That's pretty good.
That's pretty cool. Hey, mate, thanks for your time.
Watching it on TV.
Yeah, thanks for your time this afternoon. And best of luck against the English tomorrow. And thanks for all your thoughts today about, you know, what it means to you to wear the Australian jumper. I think it's a thrill any time you can speak to somebody who's had the success that you've had, and we wish you all the best tomorrow, mate.
Cheers, guys. Take it
Thanks,
easy.
Buddy.
Good luck on the punt.
Hey, they don't need luck.
We're working, mate.
You're winning. Yeah. That's what you're doing. Did you win big on that one? It was only paid $2.30.
I only bet little.
Okay. Greg Bird has gone. He can return to watching footy and Flemington at the same time. You're listening to A Few Good Sportsmen on Triple N. Thanks to Bryden's Lawyers. This is A Few Good Sportsmen. Thanks to Bryden's Lawyers, protecting your future. Matt White, Matt Burke and Ryan Girdler with us as we plough through this berry chicken.
Oh, it's hot, isn't it? We found the tissues that were right under Berkey's nose.
Yeah, that's right. We were just walking around like surgeons with our hands in the air and all this oil dripping off. We were talking about the Wallabies earlier, Berkey, and we didn't dig deep enough, I don't reckon, into the Kirtley Beale thing. Give us, we know what's happened, right? It's been in all through the papers. We know where it's at. And in the end, it cost him $48,000.
Yeah, that's right.
They pinged him another $3,000 the other day. He was so close to losing his job complete, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, we found out since the tribunal of Friday a week ago that he walked in to the meeting ready to go, and the ARU wanted to terminate his contract. Mm. So in the end of it, the district court judge that was there said, well, no, hang on, this is what we're arguing, and you're way off the mark here. In the end, as we heard from Bill Pulver, they were happy to negotiate his contract at the end of it for next year. And so I'm just finding the whole process a bit lopsided at the moment. So whether the accountability is with the board and then the chairman at the moment, is the CEO giving some good direction at the moment? We're struggling with that at the moment. And then, there's no doubt, like a Paul Gallen, you can't do that. You can't throw out what he did, and you don't condone that. And he has paid the penalty for it heavily in the hip pocket. And mind you, it's cost him another 50 in legal as well at the same time. So it's cost him a fair bit. But he will go away on tour, no doubt about it. Checker loves him. And I think, part of that negotiation, I'm sure, from Michael Checker was, we want this bloke to stay in Australia. He's too good to lose. So, there was talk of him going to rugby league at one stage there, and also French rugby. So it was very much on the cards.
It's interesting, isn't it? As players, as former players, I have no doubt that if I asked you, you'd want him back. Because he's a guy that you obviously, you train with, you'd be mates with, and he's going to win you a game.
Yeah.
That's the difference. If you're a coach, you'd want him back if he's your kind of player.
Yeah.
But if you're the CEO, it's a completely different story. And that's very similar almost in the Paul Gallen sense as well.
Correct.
Is where's rugby union at, mate? Is it in a mess?
Well, we've found out that in 2016, 17, 18, I think it's 2018 it is, no, I'm right for chips. Thanks, mate. In 2018, financially, the ARU is going to be struggling. They're not in a viable position. Now, walk into next year, and you've only got four test matches to basically get your coin from. And then there's a World Cup year, which costs you money at the same time. So the strategic plan from the top end has been perhaps a little bit short-sighted. So, this is coming from $50 million that they made in 2003, which is now just gone. So they just don't know where it is. Well, they do know where it is. It's been spent, but not in the right areas. So they're struggling at the moment. They're struggling for direction. And hopefully with Checker and just his mentality, his temperament, and maybe his direction, we'll just get this team back on deck again. Because, to talk about the Wallabies in such a way, you think this can't be it. It should be happening elsewhere, not here.
Did you ever entertain the 15-man-a-side game, Gerds?
Yeah, I was actually telling Matty before the show, why at the last year in 2004 of my career, I was talking to a French rugby side just to go over there and finish my career over in the south of France, which sounded like a great idea at the time. But I got injured late in the season, didn't pass the medical. At that time, they were only allowed two imports. But this was kind of before the league union and all the poaching and that sort of stuff. It was just like a thing that I was going to go and do at the back end of the career. But how do you feel about Ewan McKenzie and what actually, how that transpired, Berkey? Do you feel sorry for Ewan? Do you think you should have handled that differently? And what were your thoughts? Obviously, as a coach, he had a mixed tenure there with the Wallabies, but do you think that he was hardly done by?
Well, certainly by the end of it, Gerds, he was under immense pressure. I mean, take away the text message scandal and the rest of it. He was under pressure from purely his record with the Wallabies as Wallaby coach. He was 52% in the end. They lost the last game. It was about 50%. So he was struggling in that regard. Remember, this is the guy that won Super Rugby and was going to be the saviour for Australian rugby. He had to be an Australian to coach Australia after Robbie Deans had his tenure. And the way it all sort of fell out, the innuendo perhaps, I thought he would have stayed on. I thought he would have toughed it out and stayed on. And like we're talking about earlier with Gal, and you read the paper, people flick through the paper and just, you know, it's gone. In an instant, it's gone. And it will last for a period of time. I mean, if they won those games in South Africa, the New Zealand game, Matty, as you first mentioned, and then won in Argentina, as Bill Pulver said, we wouldn't be talking about this, but all of a sudden everything's opened up. Now, the text message scandal that supposedly happened back in June, and it was reported on, and he was saying he didn't know about it. And there's other people saying to the contrary that they did know about it. So it just got a little bit lost in the whole thing. Everything got a bit of, well, I was going to say shades of grey, but 50 shades of grey perhaps. It just got a bit lost.
What's your take on the World Cup, our chances, World Cup? Because it's pretty close.
It's very close. November next year, thereabouts. New Zealand are going great still at the moment. This will be an interesting tour. They'll take a couple of players over, new players. England are pretty strong at the moment. Wales are great. Remember, they're playing over in England, so they get that home ground advantage, so to speak. Ireland, it will be okay as well. South Africa is strong. Our blokes, I think Czech will get these guys turned around really, really quick. And you can see for the first week of training, they've actually said to these guys, you know, I'm enjoying what he's bringing to the table. I mean, he only has to bring half the squad on board, because he's already got half the squad there. He's in the Waratahs players.
What about Sam Burgess? How's he going to... Can they... Like, they're talking about inside centre.
Yeah.
Like, surely that's a waste of talent, like, standing him out there, giving him the ball a couple of times. Like, wouldn't he be, like, a great flanker? Like, is it too technical for him? Because he's just got to have his hands on the ball, and he's got to be involved in... I think he'd be, you know, great at things like stealing the ball and the wrestle and all those things that you've got to do there to try and get possession.
I think if anything, if he was on the flank, he'd have to play blindside flanker, because he's too big to play open side. He wouldn't be able to read the game and get around quick enough. Number 8's too technical in lockout at the back of the scrum. 6 you could, maybe. But 12, like a Sonny Bill Williams, will be able to get you across the advantage line. Now, his involvements to what he had, to what he's going to have, is going to be chalk and cheese. You know, you talk about hit-ups and tackles and offloads, he'll be doing a tenth of those in rugby union. But the impact will be quite strong. So I imagine it'll be him take the ball up, get across the advantage line, maybe get the hand away, you know, over past the tackle and get it around the other side and have someone following through. But, I mean, just imagine when you run out and send it.
It's an out-and-out waste of talent. Is that what you're saying, Berkey?
I hope he doesn't get bored with the next 6 months of having to learn the game, you know. And it's just... there's a technical term for it, but I can't say it on air at the moment. But you just got to do the hard yards. You know, you just got to do the hard work, understanding when to go in a ruck, when not to go in a ruck, what to do at the breakdown, and that's the hard part to learn about the game. And that's what he's going to have to do.
Do you think if the Wallabies, particular, don't get this World Cup together the way they need to, and they're not successful at the end of that campaign, because we know there's a lot of guys now, there's a lot of mercenaries now, not only are they going to leave the league over here, the Super 15s, but they might try different codes. Do you think, you know, the Wallabies need to get it together, really be competitive in that, to make sure some of those players stick around?
I still reckon there'll be a mass exodus, Gerds, and I the coin is just too much, you know, and you don't have to be a top rated player to get to pick up good coin in some of these teams in France type thing. So then you're going over there for a lifestyle, a change. You're learning a new language at the same time. You're playing a different style of football as well. I think you'll find that a majority of these blokes will head off.
Yeah, it's interesting. I sat with Sammy Burgess on the plane the other day coming back from the Gold Coast, and I can tell you that he is looking forward to standing out there and not getting bashed around for a while. He said, mate, I'm over it.
We're talking earlier this afternoon. I think Clinton Schafowski said, because he played up in the Reds, he said, mate, I could play till I'm 42 playing rugby union. I mean, and that's what happens sometimes. Sometimes you can go without playing, out touching the ball. And he's going to go into a European winter, which goes from, you know, it's cold from, you know, October, November through to sort of February.
October, November.
Well, exactly. Right. Exactly. It's going to be 5 months worth of just cold. And if you don't touch the ball, you have no impact.
Hey, score check from the Four Nations. Greg Bird's obviously phoned through with the latest score. New Zealand leads Samoa 6-4 in the Four Nations. And, of course, we take on England tomorrow. And you'll hear that live on Triple M. The Wanderers will be getting a nervous night ahead of their Asian League Champions final early tomorrow morning against Al Hilal. We're going to have a chat with Simon Hill pretty soon on A Few Good Sportsmen, thanks to Bryden's Lawyers, protecting your future. A Few Good Sportsmen on Triple M, Matt White, Matt Burke and Ryan Girdler here this afternoon as we close off another show in about 20 minutes' time, but still plenty to get through. And tomorrow morning at 4:30, we'll all be tuned into Fox Sports to check out a big moment for Australian sport and, of course, Australian football. By that we mean soccer, when the Western Sydney Wanderers take on Al Hilal in the Asian Champions League final. And Fox Sports expert Simon Hill is on the line right now. G'day, Simon. Thanks for your time, mate.
Pleasure, guys. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good, thanks. And I think, you know, like the rest of Australia, whether or not you're a soccer fan, you've got to be into this one. Just give us a, if you can, mate, just give us a size of the scope of what this really means, regardless of whether we win, lose or draw.
Well, the size of the task that the Wanderers have had to overcome, really, throughout this competition was probably best summed up by their quarterfinal tie against Guangzhou Evergrande, the Chinese reigning Asian champions, who they knocked out over two legs. Now, Guangzhou spent $50 million on transfer fees alone to put their squad together. That's without even including wages. So that $50 million is more than twice the entire salary cap for the 10 A-League clubs combined. So, you know, that just gives you, and I know money isn't everything, but obviously it helps to try and purchase some of the best players in the world and certainly in Asia. So for the Wanderers to knock them out, and then FC Seoul, who had probably a similar budget, maybe not quite as big, and now they're up against Al Hilal, who were essentially a de facto Saudi national team with a few very high-caliber international players thrown in. That shows you what they're up against, and the fact that they keep punching above their weight and knocking out these big guys, it's just incredible. And, of course, you know, they've only been going for 2.5 years. I mean, it's jaw-dropping. It really is.
Yes, Simon. Matt Burke, we saw them take off the other day and fly over there. Isn't it great, the tactics that the opposition do? I've seen they've had ground changes. They've had buses break down, the rest of it. Everything that puts you off for a game.
Well, you know, this is world football, and every country has its own form of mental disintegration. You know, with the Aussie cricket team, it used to be verbal sledging in the past. With the Saudis, perhaps it's shifting the grounds around. And but there are tales, you know, going back 30, 40 years of all this sort of stuff. And I remember, you know, when Australia played Uruguay in the World Cup qualifiers in 2001, you know, they had 2,000 people there to greet them. And I use the word greet in inverted commas. and they were throwing things at them and spitting at them. And, you know, if you're not tough, then you have to, then you're going to fail, basically. So, look, Popper's played in the Middle East. He spent a year playing in Qatar. So he'll know all about this. And I don't think they'll be too concerned. It's, in one way, it's a sign of respect that they're so concerned that perhaps they're having to resort to some of these dirty tricks. But I don't think it'll bother the Wanderers.
Simon, Ryan Girdler, you spoke about, you know, the enormity of what these guys have achieved, just even making the final and putting themselves in a position that they are. What is it about this Wanderers side? You spoke about the salary caps and what they're up against. What is it that makes them so good and so competitive at this level? They obviously play a really energetic style of football, and I mean, obviously they're not going to be taken lightly in the final and in the last couple of games. So what is it that really gets these Wanderers guys and gets them winning these type of games?
Well, it can be summed up really in two words, Tony Popovich. He's the guy that's driven this culture at the Wanderers. And in fairness, it's been there on and off the park since day one. You know, they did things the right way. They went out and spoke to the people of Western Sydney, whether there was already, you know, a vibrant football culture. But they asked the fans, what colours do you want? What do you want the club to be called? What do you want the stadium where we're going to play? So they've been in it all together from day one. And that sort of culture is translated into team performance and team ethic. And, you know, Popper forms his team ideals around, first of all, solid defence. And it's not always, you know, the sort of style that the purists enjoy. But as far as I'm concerned, that can go hang. If you're winning trophies and you're being successful, that breeds a long-term growth. And that's what they've been able to do in a very short space of time. I think it might be different if they lost Popper. And, of course, the more success they have, the more questions are going to be asked about whether his future is going to be in Western Sydney or in Europe.
I love, Simon, there, you know, what you've just pointed out, their success both on and off the field, the way they've absolutely transformed themselves into this incredible team and unit. But you know what else I really, mate, they're just tough, aren't they? And you've got to be tough to get to this level that they're at now.
Well, it's true, and also they learn from their mistakes very quickly. Way back in their first game in Asia, I actually called this match against Ulsan of Korea, and they took the lead very early on. They were flying, and then all of a sudden they got hit with three very quick goals, and they lost that game. And you thought, oh, you know, this is going to be a level perhaps too much for them. But they went away and studied their mistakes, and they learned from them, and adapted their style of play to play on the higher level of stage. So, you know, they've been quick to learn from those errors. And as I say, you know, if they manage to go on and win the Champions League, and this shouldn't be forgotten, you know, if they win or get a draw overnight, they then go to the FIFA Club World Cup, and they're only one game away from playing Real Madrid in a competitive game after 2.5 years. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
How good's that?
But it could happen quite easily.
We spoke to Tony Popovich 2 years ago on the Rush Hour, and I remember saying to him, have you got name tags for the boys? Because basically it was all new. Everyone was there. Yeah. Who's going to star tomorrow night, though, Simon? Who's going to be the star for the Wanderers?
Well, I think you can probably collectively say the defence will be certainly one of the stars, because look, you would imagine Al Hilal with 65,000 fans behind them in their own conditions. The Wanderers had a long flight. This is not going to be straightforward, let's be honest about this. And they've got a lot of quality. I'll just give you three names. There's a guy called Thiago Neves, who they've paid a lot of money for, a Brazilian attacking midfielder who's a tremendous talent. They've got a Saudi international called Nasser Al-Shamrani, who is nicknamed the Earthquake for the amount of goals that he scores. And potentially starting or even off the bench is the golden boy of Saudi football called Yasser Al-Qahtani, who's known as the sniper. So, you know, they're up against some quality players, but I'm confident enough in the fact that they know the system and the style that they're going to play, that they can frustrate the Saudis. And the longer the game remains goalless, the more I'd fancy the Wanderers to nick a goal on the break, and then it's game over, basically.
Oh, mate, we can't wait to get up early and watch it. 4:30 on Fox Sports, and we look forward to the call, mate. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Cheers, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too. Simon Hill on Fox Sports. So the one,
What about the self-proclaimed nicknames as well from the players?
Oh, yeah.
The sniper.
I thought the earthquake's pretty good, and then he said the sniper.
That's a whole new level.
I actually don't know if I'd want to win if I was the opposing team over there. I want to get the hell out. It's a few good sportsmen on Triple M. Some heavy talking would have gone down a little bit earlier today in Sydney when Anthony Mundine squared off against Sergey Rabchenko, with the fight taking place on November 12 in Melbourne. But what's got us really excited is the bloke who's on the line right now. Ricky Hatton is here, all-time legend of this sport, and joins us on A Few Good Sportsmen. Ricky, Matt White, Matt Burke and Ryan Girdler here. It's great to have you in the country, mate. How'd everything go down this morning? Was there any trash talking?
No, not really. It was a rarity with Anthony Mundine, wasn't it, really, I guess. he was very respectful. I think he knows it's a very, very big fight for him. It's a very big fight for both fighters. I mean, Sergey, my boxer, is the WBC silver champion. He's ranked number two in the world, and the winner arguably could get a fight against Floyd Mayweather, you know, as Mayweather is the champion. Even if Floyd Mayweather doesn't, then the title goes vacant, and then the winner fights for the vacant title. So it's a massive fight for both fighters in very different ways. As Sergei's on the way up, and Anthony Mundine, and a lot of people are saying that this could be his last fight if he loses. Mm. So big fight.
Tell us a little bit, Ricky. Tell us a little bit about your charger. He's 25-0, 18 knockouts, so great record. But we haven't heard much of him over here. What's his strengths?
His punching power is his strengths. He's absolutely horrendously murderous puncher. Hits very, very, very hard. He's hungry. He had no fear of coming over to Australia and fighting such a big name as Anthony Mundine in his backyard. So he's a real throwback. He doesn't care. You know, he's very, very tough. He's very, very strong. Hits very, very hard. Very determined. And I think I really do think he'll beat Anthony Mundine. I think, but we're not taking Anthony lightly. A lot of people have turned around and said because of Anthony's last fight against Clotty, where he was stopped, and with Sergei's knockout record, that people are already making assumptions that the fight's already finished. But me and Sergei certainly aren't thinking that. If boxing's hard enough to beat the man in front of you out of the best of times, but when he's fighting for his career, that makes the man extremely dangerous. So I think it will be a good fight, youth versus experience in many ways again.
Ricky, what about you sitting on the sideline as his mentor, as his trainer these days? How edgy do you get during the fight?
Very edgy, because boxing is a passion for me. You know what I mean? I was very fortunate to reach the top in my career, and you know, I achieved all my goals, and I know how important each fight was to me, and I'm sure it's the same for the lads that I promote and the lads I train. And it's a passion for me. You know, I can't train a fighter I don't feel something for. I have a very close bond with all my fighters. I know how much it means to them, and to be honest, I get very nervous because I throw every punch for them, because I know my boxing career was my life, and I know it's their life. You know, so it's very, very important.
So what do you get up to these days, Ricky? I mean, we all followed your career. We're a nation that loves the sport of boxing, and we've got a deep history in it. And you were the guy that stopped Kostya Zou and put an end to his career. What's a year for you like now? Do you get time to relax, or are you full-time at this?
No, full-time, to be honest. I do get a bit of time to relax with me kids and my family. But, no, like I said earlier, it's a passion for me. You know, I promote fighters now. I train fighters. I trained two European champions in Rabchenko and Zanazakianov. I promote, in fact, you know, trying to bring the champions through to Australian boxing in many ways. I promote Lucas Big Daddy Brown, who's the Commonwealth Heavyweight Champion, the first Australian Commonwealth Heavyweight Champion for 120 years. The Olympian boys, Damien Hooper and Cameron Hammond, wonderful unbeaten talents that are coming through. So it makes me feel very, very proud. I am very busy. It's a passion for me, and makes me proud to, you know, to see, you know, that they have to come. I can come all the way across to the other side of the world and still see that my name means something. It makes me feel very, 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 very proud, even though I've hung the gloves up, I guess.
Well, you were out here a couple of months ago. You had another fighter out here, so I'm thinking that, you know, all the good spots, all the nice places to hang out. Ricky, you're going to get involved in the Spring Carnival, obviously big racing this time of year in Australia.
I hope so. I've only been here a couple of days, and to be honest with you, my brain's still in Manchester mode a little bit with the flight that came over. That was a war in itself. But I love Australia. You know, we couldn't be any further away. But it's no different to the United Kingdom. To be honest with you, they love the sport. You know, they love it there. The down to earth people. You know, it's just like being at home. And I know I broke a lot of Aussies' hearts when I beat Kostya Zou all them years ago. But I'd like to think they forgive me now when they see me trying to bring the next batch of Australian talent through. But I've got a feeling I might not be on the Christmas card list come November 12th, because I think my lad will be Anthony Mundine. So but no, I'm happy to have the association in Australian boxing. I absolutely love the place, I love the people, and I look forward to coming every time.
Now, Ricky, you may not remember, but we actually met on a Questioner's Sport down at the BBC about 8 years ago. It's okay if you don't remember. That's all right. But what I did have memories of you, mate, I was living over in the UK, and Ryan and I played rugby league, rugby union, and the journos, when they go, you sort of, we don't get any say back. But I remember you got a journo and he put a fat suit on and you laid a cutlet into his guts and knocked him on the ground. That yeah, was probably yeah, what, yeah. You remember that. That was one of the best things I reckon I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I have such a good relationship with the sports journalists, to be honest with you. But I think I got beat by Floyd Mayweather, and I was a little bit down about it, so I put a few pounds on, and all the press were saying that Ricky will never come back the same, he'll never be the same fighter, he should retire, and I got the hump, as we'd say. Really lost me rag about it. So rather than having a slanging match with them, because they'll get you back with a pen, won't they? You know?
Yeah.
So I just put a fat suit on, and I just and they just all sat there at press row and just died. Laughing the bellies off, you know what I mean? That's my sense of humour. And to be honest with you, you've got to have a big set of testicles, shall we say, to get beat by Mayweather, then box at the City of Manchester Stadium in front of 58,000 on your first combat fight and walk out with a fat suit on.
Hey, Ricky, the reason Berkey brought that up is because we've got the suit here and Berkey was saying in the break that he reckons you hit like a girl.
I bet it's a bit tight on him, isn't it?
You got it. Oh, you're an absolute champ. Hey, Ricky, thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Great to speak to you.
Enjoy your time in Australia, and we look forward to that fight on November the 12th at Hisense Arena. So it's Anthony Mundine against Sergey Rabchenko. Can you believe we just spoke to Ricky Hatton?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? I was on the back page with him a couple of weeks ago, and gee, I wish I could have gone out for a beer. He's got some stories, that guy. Yeah. He's an absolute classic. Can I just give a quick shout out to another Australian fighter in the UFC? Is the Australian champ Alex Volkanovski. He fights down in Thrill tonight. So good luck, bud. I hope you do well.
Hey, who did you tip in race 6?
Number 2.
Who did you tip in race 6?
I tipped the 8, which just got photoed out by number 2. Oh, unbelievable.
What's number 2?
Yeah.
Happy trails. I'm going to finish on a winning note. That's exactly what I said, but I did say don't follow me. Well, that wraps up a few good sportsmen for this afternoon. Matt Burke, Ryan Girdle, it's been great fun.
Thanks, buddy.
Jules back next week, and we'll be sitting back and having a beer and listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks to Bryden's Lawyers, protecting your future. A few good sportsmen. Have a great afternoon on Triple M.